We met in closed session and discussed a personnel matter. Is that the correct reporting out? Personnel director? And we took no action. I know we have a couple of folks here to speak on item 16, which is in the action consent portion of the meeting, and I don't know whether we want to amend the order of business to facilitate that input without having to make folks wait around, even though the meeting is going to be fascinating in its entirety. So could we have a consensus on that? And we'll, why don't we move item 16 to right after public comment, and then we can have that discussion. Okay.
Superintendent's updates.
Okay. After the superintendent's update, that'll work. We do, yeah. That's a good point, because we have to take action on the item itself. All right. In that case, let's see. Approval of the minutes. Okay. Why don't you then take the lead, Marilyn?
I believe I had one. It's, and it's just a housekeeping comment on the minutes of September 7th. It is noted that Dr. Matakovich was present, and we know that she was not.
All right. Any further additions or corrections to the minutes of September 7th? Seeing no one, the chair moves approval.
In Richmond last year, we had a speech, print journalism, and broadcast journalism unit that we did. And this was made possible by the public education government, or PEG, funding that we received through charter. And it allowed us to purchase the equipment, both for the cameras for the entire district and the editing equipment.
We made a new show called The Dalmar's Flash Report.
We wrote scripts and did all of the filming and helped edit the show.
I really liked learning about all of the technical parts of the class, like being the cameraman and using the editing program.
I like that too, Mara. But my favorite part was being a camera person.
Here is some of the Del Mar Splash Report. We hope you enjoy the show.
I'm Nico. Now for school news, here are Morgan, Genesis, and Keelan interviewing Lena about safety.
Hello, my name is Keelan.
And I'm Morgan.
And I'm Genesis.
And we're here with Lena to ask her some questions about safety.
How did you break your leg in this accident?
I was running through the hall and I turned the corner and a boy jumped over the trash can and landed on me.
That sounds like it hurt.
A lot.
How long were you in your cast, Lena?
I was in my cast for 6 weeks.
How would you explain our new rules at Del Mar?
I like our new rules because if you run, then you get a behavior ticket and you won't end up like me.
This is Del Mar Splash Report.
We hope you understand why it is important to be safe.
If you like random questions,
well, it was an excellent production. I want to compliment you on the very creative wipes that you were using. You had a couple of vertical wipes. And it was very entertaining. It's good to see that the JPEG money is being used and that the students seem to enjoy it and are getting a lot out of it. So thank you, Maria. Also, you got quite a few plugs in there for your fifth grade class, I noticed. Thank you very much. And next we'll do student reports, and we have Amanda Irons with us tonight. Go ahead, Amanda. You have to get it, yeah.
Okay. Amanda Irons. I'm from Morro Bay High School. Probably the biggest upcoming event we have is Homecoming. That's going to be October 4th through 6th. Our theme this year is still kind of under wraps, but it's Rescue Me, so it's kind of targeting seniors are lifeguards, juniors are Army, I do believe. They're firemen. Sophomores are Army, and freshmen are now police. And so that's kind of our theme. Our dance is going to incorporate that. And every day is a spirit day, which is going to incorporate the theme. On the 5th is going to be movie night. On the 6th is going to be our carnival, which is going to take place at lunch. And that night, we're going to follow that up with Powder Puff, which is the junior and senior girls facing off in a flag football. It's going to be really fun, so go seniors. And Thursday night, on the 7th, there's going to be a bonfire, and that's just all of our students coming and just having a kind of pregame bonding sesh. On the 8th is the actual game, and at the game, we're going to have our royalty announced along with floats and that are incorporating all of the classes. And on the 9th, ending homecoming week, is our dance, and it's going to be really great. Fall sports is another thing that we're going to talk about, and all of them are going great. We just had our football game. Unfortunately, we lost to Philmont, but start of the season, we got a lot of room to grow. This upcoming Friday is the SLO versus Morro Bay game, and right after that game, ASB is hosting a dance, and that's open to both schools, and we're really looking forward to it. We had a successful club rush with the addition of 6 more clubs than last year. We have a total of 18 clubs, which range from environmental club to and donation. So if anyone is interested to either walk 3 miles, or there's a shorter course that's about 1 mile, or if you're interested in donating, you can visit www.slowfoodbank.org, and there's information on the website. Finally, FFA leadership and ASB joined together, and we went to a ropes course at Camp San Luis. It was really fun. It was kind of a team bonding leadership exercise. No one died, so that's good. I only fell like a foot, so I mean, it wasn't a big deal. And this year, we're going to really try to put FFA leadership and ASB leadership together to make a better school year. So that's what's taking place at Morro Bay.
Thank you, Amanda. In the ribs for the drive-through barbecue, pork or beef? Do you know?
The barbecue is Wednesday the 29th.
Thank you, Amanda. Appreciate your report. Feel free to stay as long as you would like. Or before we get into the rest of the agenda, I want to just ask Janet Gould to thank the students here at Del Mar for some lovely pictures. No? Where did they come from? Jackie. Are you going to talk about them later? Oh, good. All right. Nobody briefed me on the pictures. They were just all these great pictures up here. Okay. Superintendent's report. Take it away, Dr. Frater. Oh, public comment. Excuse me. We do want to hear from the public. We have 2 requests to speak for item 16. Is there anyone who would like to address the board on anything that's not on the agenda or on any item on the agenda if it's more convenient for you to do so now? Seeing no one, I'm sorry. Oh, please come forward. Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's a public comment on any item. We allow 3 minutes, and the board, since it's an item that's not on the agenda, the board cannot respond directly to comments.
I understand. Comments. I'm okay. Just giving you information.
Thank you.
I'm actually a little early. I'm going to go to the superintendent next, but your board meeting is happening now, so I wanted to kind of bring this some to your
Okay,
attention.
Go ahead and tell us who you are, sir.
Okay, my name is Russ Dierman. I'm the daughter of a 15-year-old girl who attends Lowell High School. I'm here to address you this evening because I have concerns about the policies of safety and the enforcement of those policies on the school campuses. My daughter was suspended last Wednesday for, according to the report I just got today, attempting to cause physical injury to another person. So you're probably wondering why I'm talking to you about safety when she got suspended for fighting. But when it happened, I was called to work to come pick my daughter up. And when I arrived, I talked to Mr. Brown, the dean, about what had happened. Why the decision was made, and at the onset, I took him on his word in support of the decision. However, after talking with my daughter and several other kids, I got more details, and my perception of what really happened changed. I've been an AYSO rep for years. I've been involved with youth sports. I know lots of kids and lots of parents and stuff, so I have a good relationship with most everybody in my kids' peer groups. Anyways, my daughter and her boyfriend were sitting right near the snack bar area outside the high school gym at Slow High School. There's the glass door side, and there's an old snack bar that's never used. And they were sitting by the bike racks there when a boy walked by who they've never seen before. And the kid just came over and started accosting him verbally, you know, calling my daughter, you know, porcelain, all these, you know, really bad words. I mean, anything that if you and I walked in any place of business or we were in work or school, we'd be slapped with a civil lawsuit or some HR action. I mean, it's clearly illegal stuff. And tried to start a fight. Anyways, while talking to the daughter's boyfriend, he referred to her all those things and tried to bait him into a fight. Finally, after they stood up and because the one aggressor kid kicked him, so my daughter's boyfriend stood up and they shoved each other. Okay. It wasn't much, but anyways, the aggressor left. And by the way, the aggressor's a kid that's on probation, so he's got previous convictions.
Sir,
as well.
Please do not identify the other student or any other student.
I understand. I'm not saying any names. So anyways, he said he'd be back. True to his word, he came back about 20 minutes later, and with him he brought about 15 other boys. They came around from the main part of the school. Of course, the boys were just there to see a fight. But when they came around the corner, my daughter and her boyfriend were basically cornered, and the whole thing started up again with a verbal assault. And this time, my daughter, against the wall, had her boyfriend's arms around her waist, so he couldn't get into a fight. And the other one who pushed before got right like this, so my daughter pushed him away because he was that close. So, anyways. All that stuff going on
in this office. And
right. I'm not challenging the suspension, but the policies are...
No, sir, I understand.
...are vague on the board's part about what to do about verbal stuff, and that's what I bring to you. Just basically, this happened. This goes on a lot. I know a lot of young girls that have had as bad as cutting problems because of this. So,
okay,
I'm bringing this to your attention, and I'll be back next month, or I'll do something to maybe tell you how it's progressing from my end.
Okay.
That's all I wanted to say. Thanks for the extra time.
Thank you, sir. Okay, anyone else like to address the board? Okay, seeing no one, we will close public unscheduled public appearance and move on to the superintendent's report.
I'd like to introduce Greg Halfman, and he's going to talk about the ongoings of our summer school program. To kick off our really big shoe, we'll have Jackie Kirk Martinez, my colleague, to talk about the special ed program.
Those pictures in front of you, good evening, those pictures in front of you are compliments of the preschool program art projects from extended school year. Summer school is, for special needs students, it's extended school year. And that was a product of the preschool program, and they wanted to make sure you had a copy of that. Also, some of the photos, there's three photos out there of some of the other art projects on the table. You'll see one picture that Mr. Buckman is holding right now. It's of our autism, two summer autism programs, and we have three teachers, a program specialist and two teachers. They combined the class. At the end of the program, the students all made an apron for the program specialist, and because she cooks and does special projects with them. To report for the extended school year program, we had 130 students attending for the extended school year program in approximately 16 classes. This is an increase over time because of the transfer of classes from the county office to the district. Also, we've merged several of our classes together, and we have our two autism classes for the students who are fully included into general education, and we provide the specific social skill building during that time. It was very successful. We have progress notes that we provided to the teachers at the end of the summer as well. And now I pass the rest on to Mr. Halfman.
As you know, several years ago we began a program where we offered an opportunity for teachers who wished to explore the possibility of administration to have that opportunity for firsthand experience through the position of summer school principal. And this year we were very fortunate to have Becky Lincoln from the Laguna staff to serve as our summer school principal, and I'd like to introduce Becky.
Thank you. Good evening. Just going to touch on a few things here. Push this down. Can you hear me okay? Okay. Due to recent budget cuts, we were very fortunate in continuing our partnership with Cuesta College this year, and they maintained their relationship with us because of our strong attendance record. Many classes were not offered this year, such as computer applications, health and family living, so we focused on remedial classes and our partnership with Cuesta, which provided enrichment courses. The highlight of the evening that I would like to focus on is the success of our district-wide summer school sites this year, San Luis High, Morro Bay, Bishop's Peak, and Del Mar, in addition to our site-specific summer schools, which included Pacheco, Hawthorne, and Baywood. These programs are extremely needed and effective because these schools are servicing their own. In other words, they have their own teachers servicing their own children, so they can monitor their progress, and they know, you know, the children beforehand. And lastly, I'd like to recognize IMC. I was informed that they supplied over 4,000 items to our summer school teachers this year, which is a huge, huge deal. And I have to say something about transportation. They did a fabulous job in coordinating all of these bus routes and the change from Los Osos Middle School to Morro Bay and all these last minute, you know, things that came in the way of construction and so forth. They did a great job. So having said that, we'd like to show a short video that Baywood put together for your entertainment.
Dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you. That your elders grew by, and so please help them with your need. They see the truth before they can die. Teach your parents well, their children's hell
will slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.
The fella in the video with the underachiever T-shirt is no longer in that category. So he, because of summer school, he's moved up. I don't know if you caught it in Becky's comments, but we were the only program that continued a partnership with Cuesta. As you probably saw in the newspaper, Cuesta's own program was cut back dramatically. They dropped all the other districts around the county. They kept us because we delivered ADA. And we've had very large classes in summer school for a number of years now, and sometimes people have said to me, oh my gosh, 44 in a history class? That's crazy. It's really not. It really works because everybody either wants to be there or needs to be there. And those are two great motivations, and summer school works extremely well because of that. If somebody gets a little distracted, the people next to them say, hey, quiet down, I got to get this class, and I got to get this done, and I got to get it done successfully. So it's kind of self-monitoring. So we've been able to move a huge number of students through at the absolute rock-bottom cost, and it has been a big benefit to the students that have had that opportunity. Any questions for Becky?
Good one, Greg. No, but thank you very much, Becky, for the report, and I want to acknowledge Jeff Guy and the BG&T folks for the transportation component. So, and thanks very much for the report. Anybody have anything?
We actually have a second report. As you know, the classified school personnel are governed by a personnel commission in our school district, and annually one of our commissioners comes to give a brief report to the board on their activities for the year, and I'm pleased to introduce our chairperson for the 2009-10 year, Gail Sears, who is going to give you a little brief update on the Personnel Commission's activities this year.
Good evening. I am Gail Sears, chairman of the Personnel Commission, and I'm here with our annual report. But first, I would like to offer an explanation of the role of the commission. As a new appointee some years ago, I checked into the history of personnel commissions, and much to my surprise, I found it fascinating. So, as a brief introduction to our purpose, I'd like to go back in history to a time with some correlations to today, a time when jobs were scarce. It was Los Angeles during the Depression, and an election was being held for members of the school board. Promises of jobs were made by candidates to those who helped in their election. And immediately after the installation of the four successful candidates, over 500 employees of the Los Angeles Unified School District were fired. In order to make room for those to be hired who had helped successful board members in their election of the school board. It was the we commissioners generally meet monthly to deal with issues related to job descriptions, classification, hiring, transfers, employee appeals, and much more. The bulk of our work this year has been with the classification process. As you know, when we classify a position, we take a job and we attach it to a job description with specific duties and qualifications and a given pay level. To do this effectively, we sometimes arrange a visit to a workplace. As an example, this year we spent some time at the Laguna Central Kitchen as we prepared to work on the classification for the positions of food service worker one, worker two, food service delivery driver, food service warehouse delivery driver, baker, cook, senior food service worker, central kitchen supervisor, and director of food service. In all this year, the Personnel Commission reviewed and revised 16 job classifications, which affects 164 employees. There are a number of other duties performed this year, such as creating a new classification for our occupational therapists, extending an eligibility list for special education paraeducators, and meeting our goals of evaluating the director of personnel and updating the job description for that position. As perhaps a sign of our difficult times, you may have noticed that we received 131 more completed applications for classified positions this year over last year, with a total of 355 applications for 57 openings. That occurred while the number of total district positions actually fell slightly from 399 employees to 392. There is much more in the annual report. However, at this point, I'd like to say that those of us on the Personnel Commission want to thank the school board members for your continuing support. We also want to express our appreciation for the excellent help and fine guidance of Personnel Director Rick Robinette and Personnel Analyst Jean Keller, as well as their staff. Thank you very much.
Whoops, thank you for the report, and keep up the good work. We wish all areas of the school district function as well as the Personnel Commission.
Thank you.
Any questions, my board members? Okay.
No questions. I just would like to acknowledge and thank you all for your service, Gail and Navjeet and Kent and Jean. You do a wonderful job. You truly are the unsung heroes of our classified workers, and we really appreciate it. We wish you those bouquets that everyone else gets at the end of the year. So we'll just give them to you verbally. So thank you.
Thank you. It is a pleasure.
Walter. Chris?
And thank you for the history lesson.
Yeah, it was fascinating. Okay, next we will move to item 16, and who's going to Russell and Brad? Brad Parker, consultant Brad Parker.
Good evening, Mr. President, members of the board. I'm Brad Parker. You may remember me. I used to be an employee of the district. Thank you. I want to tell a little story about why we're at the point we are right now. We had a sort of an emergency meeting with a city manager and public works director for Morro Bay about a week ago, because it was apparent that following the process, the approval process that the city was going through, we were not going to make the timelines required in order to qualify for recovery zone bonds. These are the tax-exempt bonds issued to private agencies administered by the state of California, but federal funding that Sun Edison was requiring in order to continue with the project. And as the board will recall, all along, we've been very aware that the project is difficult to make cost-effective for the school district, and the marching orders were revenue neutral year one with the potential for increased savings year over year after that. So accessing these bonds was a very important aspect of the financing plan that Sun Edison had. Morro Bay, I had taken, have in my history with the school district, taken a number of projects through the city of Morro Bay, and I am very aware that they like to do their own CEQA studies and prefer not to accept a study from another agency. And while I thought we had plenty of time to go through that process, and that's the process we were going through, we were simply not going to get there. So I shared with city staff that that not only had the school system, if they were going to do a mitigated negative declaration, requires a 30-day waiting period while other agencies are notified, and the initial study had not yet been prepared as of last week. Now, the deadline we're marching up against is the end of this this calendar year. And in fact, a November 17th CDLAC meeting. CDLAC is the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee. So I explained to staff that while we thought it best not to try and exert our lead agency status originally, that now there was really no choice, and that requested they consider accepting our CEQA findings, thereby not having to go through the 30-day waiting period and being able to make an October 4th Planning Commission agenda with the project in order to get the coastal development permit for the solar system at Morro Bay High School. That's a kind of a long story. I hope I got it out there so it was clear. City staff said that they would, but they did request that because the original CEQA filing that we did, because the project has been designed redesigned 4 or 5 times, the original description included tree removal. There are now no trees being removed at Morro Bay High School because we were able to redesign, optimize system size, and avoid tree removal. In fact, city staff had said that they thought they could do a CE, except that the archaeological study that we provided them indicated there were some cultural artifacts within 300 feet of the project site. So their guidelines said that they needed to not do a CE, categorical exemption, but they had to do a mitigated negative declaration. We don't have those same guidelines. So city staff has, at this point in time, agreed to move it forward and request that we revise our CEQA filing to describe the project as it currently exists, which is with no tree removal, trimming of 20 trees, and some additional information that I can share with the board tonight regarding screening planting from Highway 1 so that the collectors are not essentially not visible from Highway 1, as well as the visual descriptions of the trees that are being trimmed or proposed to be trimmed. And we have that on a PowerPoint. Could you bring that up? So what we're asking the board to do tonight is to basically reaffirm the findings that you made previously, given that the project now has no tree removal and only tree trimming associated with it. So we have, I think we have like 15 photos. And I think, do you have the visual simulations up first, Kim? Yeah, okay, these are the visual simulations, and you'll find that this is a view from Highway 1 without any screening added, so that's the way it exists right now. And then the next slide will show, and the arrays are in there. So the next slide will show with visual screening after the plants have been in place. Did you go to the next? Did you get both of those? I didn't see. Okay, 1A and 1B. Okay. All right, there you can see the plants. Okay, so then 2A is another view. And you can see the arrays from Highway 1. And then 2B would show the screening shrubs. Similarly, 3A, you can see the arrays and with screening shrubs. And 4A and with the screening shrubs. So the city asked for this visual simulation. The parking lot canopy structures have a very thin profile and they really don't stand out much. So we can move on to tree trimming. This is taken from in front of Morro Bay High's office, and it shows the height of the trees between the high school and Highway 1 in one view, and the red line is the height that they would be trimmed to. Go ahead. Another view, this is taken looking slightly panned to the right from the first view, still taken from in front of the high school. Go ahead. There's another view of the same two slides from a different perspective. And that's the property separating the vacant lot from the high school to the south. shows that height at 39.6. That's hard to see. Revision to the original categorical exemption that the board filed, and I guess I'd like to answer any questions if you have any.
So what's the status with Morro Bay City staff if the board approves this this exemption this evening?
They've indicated that they'll put it on an October 4th Planning Commission meeting agenda.
Oh, okay. Morro Bay, that was the part I didn't understand.
And if Planning Commission approves it, then staff has, I think, 5 days to submit it to Coastal, which is a standard practice. Coastal Commission has then 10 working days to decide if they want to do an appeal. And at that point in time, we would have the permit. All that would, if that all falls into place correctly, that would give CDLAC, the Debt Limit Allocation Committee staff, time to get it on the November 17th agenda for a bond allocation award.
Okay. Chris?
And if the Morro Bay Planning Commission does not approve this?
We would have to deal with that as we go.
So then the project would essentially be off the table in Morro Bay because we wouldn't be able to get the funding. And so would we be able to go forward with the program at all, minus Morro Bay High School?
Sun Edison has indicated they deal in blocks of $10 million. Sun Edison deals in financial blocks of like $10 million.
Okay.
And they've indicated that it's very doubtful that they would want to continue with the project if we lose a high school, which is almost 400 kilowatts.
Okay.
The board could have other options available to it, and if we get to that point and are not able to move forward under the path that we're moving forward now, we would bring those options back to the board for consideration. It's doubtful that it would be a power purchase agreement, but it's not impossible. There are other avenues, including Build America bonds and self-financing in such a fashion that might make it economically feasible. Those would be future discussions. Obviously, we're trying to succeed bringing this forward with the original intent under a power purchase agreement with Sun Edison.
And again, just to review, so if this is not approved by the board this evening, it can't go before the Morro Bay Planning Commission, which would approve or disapprove the project. And so this vote tonight is a key vote on whether the project actually goes forward for throughout the whole district as we have imagined it to be. Is that correct?
It certainly could be, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Bill?
So it's my understanding that scenic highway, under scenic highways, a categorical exemption shall not be used for a project which may result in damage to scenic resources. In your opinion, are we damaging scenic resources?
Not in my opinion. We showed you the visuals. When it comes to beauty and the eye of the beholder, why reasonable people disagree, just as reasonable people disagree with interpretation of CEQA regulations.
Thank you.
Catherine.
Just so that you can help us with what we saw here, it appeared to me as though the only thing we would be changing in terms of a view shed is the view of a parking lot. Am I incorrect about that?
From the, if you were driving on the scenic corridor on Highway 1 and you looked up, some of the trees would be shorter. But the minimum height, I think, is 35 feet, and others are trimmed to 50 feet and 39.6. So will the view be different? Yeah, you could say that's going to be different. Plus, just the addition of the screening shrubs makes a difference in the view, but I don't think that it's, my opinion is that it's not detrimental to the...
But the purpose of the screening shrubs is to cover the structures, but it also covers the view of the parking lot.
Yes, it actually, I think the screening shrubs improve the view looking low towards the high school, not so much for the canopy structures, but for the parking lot. Right. Parking lots aren't particularly attractive.
Okay, anybody else? That case, we'll ask for any public comment. Okay. Let's just go. First, we'll have Betty Winholtz.
Thank you. My name is Betty Winholtz. I am on the City Council of Morro Bay, but I'm speaking for myself this evening. I sent a letter this morning. I apologize for the lateness. And I think everyone got it except for one person, and your email bounced back. I used the email on the website, so you know that. Thank you. I just want to highlight some of my points in my letter to you. I understand that you're under the gun and that you're trying to go for a bond, but you're not even supposed to damage in the first place, and if you can prevent that. And I think that's part of my personal issue here, is that when you top Cyprus, which is what you'll be doing, that kills them, okay? And that if you top them at 35 feet, know that the highway is raised at that point, that the high school sits down, the highway's up here. So when you top them, you're going to be looking, you know, pretty close to the top of where you're topping those trees. And those are not kinds of trees that will continue to grow if they're topped. And so this is one of our scenic resources along Highway 1. And so topping a tree to me is, in essence, the same thing as taking them out. I've put in here Class 8, which relates to a disturbance of healthy and mature trees, which is exactly what this environment is, and so based on that alone, this should not be categorically exempt. And then looking at the other item, which was that was number 4 and number 8, which deals with protection and the construction of activities that are relaxing standards. So I feel like you're relaxing some standards here that should not be relaxed in terms of protecting the environment. I think that this project at some point could be workable, but not under this kind of environmental study, that it needs to go back and get the appropriate environmental study. Thank you.
Thank you. Julie Tacker. Get that thing.
Those are squeaky shoes. Yes, I am Julie Tacker. I've kind of been before your board a few times to talk about these projects and the concerns with the categorical exemption that your board took, that you took that step last November. Ironically, in October, your environmental consultant recommended that you do something called a mitigated negative declaration. Two different animals. And when they came back, when your consultant and Mr. Parker came back in November, they put a categorical exemption in front of you, never explaining why we weren't doing the mitigated negative declaration. And had you done that, I think you'd be where you wanted to be today. Because we've rushed, what appeared to be a shortcut ended up taking longer because we didn't do the environment, the due diligence that it deserves. And not only is the Morro Bay project significant in that it is a visual impact, if you had gone to the rooftops, you wouldn't be cutting these trees. You wouldn't be disturbing the ground that may have archaeological remnants under it. In the appeal for the Los Osos projects, one of the supervisors asked if the buildings had been analyzed by a civil engineer. The answer was no. Mr. Parker is making assumptions on the structurally sound quality of these buildings that our children are housed in every day. So it makes me wonder, if they're safe enough to hold our kids inside, why aren't they safe enough to hold these rooftop solar arrays? You didn't go there. You took the shortcut. You chose to go with carports, which in Mr. Parker's categorical exemption, he gives you three choices, the A, the B, and the C. Carports are in B, but these are not just carports. They are... they're structures for solar panels. when he talks about replacement and reconstruction, it's really just a different way that your properties are going to be electrified. They're not getting reconstructed or replacement of electrical. The electrical panel stays the same. The class 14, the minor additions to school, these are all a stretch to a categorical exemption. And with a categorical exemption, no mitigation is necessary. And that he continues to tell you that they're self-mitigating, there's that word. You're mitigating your damage. You're
Thank
doing
you.
Damage.
So, Mr. Parker, are we killing cypress trees?
We worked closely with a certified arborist who gave us the height recommendations, and those would be followed. And he was certainly interested in not killing the trees. So I assume that he knows his business and that it would not be killing the trees.
The ability of the buildings, it was all about the need to do periodic maintenance on roofs and the cost and disruption involved in removing arrays, doing the roof and then putting them back up. Am I missing something?
No, you're correct. We did a forecasting. Solar photovoltaic panels are—they're getting a 50-year track record now, and they're guaranteed for 80% of the production after 20 years. So, given the potential that these would be producing power for the school district for 50 years, it's very conceivable that we would re-roof twice during that time frame, and in some roofs potentially three times. Given the added cost to remove the panels, re-roof, the downtime for the solar, and replace the panels, we thought our projections indicated it would likely come close to zeroing out the projected savings that we're trying to get. Now, we could say, that's fine, that's for another board, but that's not what we said. We said, look, we're going to look for the long run. We're not going to saddle a future board with the increased cost of re-roofing. Maintenance of your buildings is an expensive undertaking at best. And so the economics of looking at a 50-year life on rooftop for re-roofing was a primary consideration. Secondary to that is, although all the school buildings are structurally safe for children, many of them were built three or four code changes previously. So there have been a number of code changes in that time. Structural engineers that I've talked with regarding new buildings that we have indicated that DSA structural analysis would likely want to have some detailed analysis on each building as well as upgrades. The costs associated with that would be a large percentage of the total construction cost of this proposed project and would make it uneconomical for Sun Edison or the school district.
And those additional costs would be borne by the school district as opposed to Sun Edison under the current power purchase agreement that's under discussion?
If we were to say, if the board wanted to go on to the rooftops, right, it would be a new agreement with Sun Edison or whomever wanted to finance the project.
Okay.
And if we went on the rooftops, we would still need to, that the trees would still be an issue, we would still need to top the cypress?
Trees wouldn't necessarily be an issue, but in some cases, and as one of the county supervisors mentioned, that some of the rooftop mountings have more of a visual impact than the carport structures that we're proposing. And it depends on where they're located, but rooftop mounting, which is what you see typically on homes, it certainly presents a different visual look for the roof. I don't know, I'm not judging whether it's good or bad, but whenever you project higher than the existing roof, whenever they're tilted up, you have to deal with wind uplift, wind loading, not just the weight. And we would probably have some hurdles to go through with respect to visual impacts if we went on the roof.
Okay, anybody else have any other questions for Brad?
Actually, I do. I just want to understand the process then. So from here, assuming it was approved tonight, it would go to the Morro Bay Planning Commission and Committee and then to the City Council, or not to the Morro Bay City Council at all?
If the Morro Bay Planning Commission approves it on their October 4th meeting, assuming that it gets there, then it would just be staff has 5 days to submit it to Coastal. Coastal has 10 days to decide whether they want to appeal. And at that point in time, if both those steps are passed successfully, the permit would be granted.
And have we had any conversations with the Coastal Commission about this project? We have no,
no.
idea where they stand on that. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other input? Okay. The chair will make a motion that we approve, that the Board of Education approve the findings of the preliminary environmental assessment and make the determination that the project qualifies for a self-mitigated categorical exemption, Class 2C, replacement or reconstruction, Class 3A, new construction or conversion of small structures, and Class 14, minor additions to schools, and to authorize the superintendent or his designee to file the necessary documents.
Okay, and I will second.
Any further discussion?
I would just like to say that I respect the comments that have been made here tonight and the women who have made them in terms of their concern about the coast and the view and our preservation. And I just want to say that I have a great deal of confidence in the Coastal Commission to weigh all of these aspects that you've brought to us, as well as the ones that have been raised by our reporting. And I live on the coast, and I'm very familiar with how strenuously the Coastal Commission protects the area. So I feel confident in moving forward with
Education Code Section 60119. That requires that our governing board annually determine that every student in our school district has sufficient instructional materials. We're required to check the content areas of English language arts, history, social science, mathematics, and science. That's for grades K-12. And in addition, for grades 9-12, we're required to make sure we have those materials for our foreign language, health, and foreign language and health classes, as well as making sure we have enough laboratory science equipment. So after a concerted effort by our various staff members at the district and at our schools, our principals have confirmed that all students in our district have the sufficient instructional materials. And so this public hearing tonight allows for community input prior to the board taking action on this item at the next meeting.
Rita, I know that we, because of the state economics, that there's been some change to the text adoption cycles. What, if any, impact have the changes to the adoption cycle had on sufficient textbooks?
We're still required to make this annual determination, but we're not required to have adopted our English language arts materials. We're given until, I believe, it's 2013-14 in order to do that.
Okay. Any questions for Dr. Dalkoskamp? Thank you. Let's see. What do we do tonight? Oh, we're holding. No. Oh, we're going to open. Thank you, Chris. Thank you. We'll open the public hearing on the issue of sufficiency of textbooks and materials. Would anyone like to address the board during this hearing? Seeing no one, we'll close the hearing, bring it back to the board, and we will take this item up at our next board meeting. All right. Racing ahead to controversial resolution, item number 2. It's the International Walk or Bike to School Month, October 2010. And let's see. Who's got that one?
Yeah, I want to thank Trustee Unger for recommending this to us. And, you know, it's anything we can do to promote healthy lifestyles and getting kids to and families to be more cognizant of their health. And the idea that if they can walk to school, ride their bike to school, and just be more involved in sort of promoting that lifestyle. So the resolution before you is to recognize the Walk to School Day is October 6th, Walk to School Week is October 4th through 8th, and the International Walk to School Month is October. So the resolution will sort of recognize that you support that, and allows me to move that to the staff or to the sites to encourage them to participate.
Chris, I'd be happy to defer to you on this one. I don't know what I think there's some good language in the resolution. If you wouldn't mind reading it,
I would be happy to read it. And of course, I appreciate the folks that sent this to the board and asked the board to consider it as a resolution. And one thing I'm glad to see about our modern walk to school is that, unlike me, who had to walk 5 miles to school each day uphill in the snow both ways, I think our streets are better in San Luis Obispo.
And that was at Humboldt State.
That was at Humboldt State. It was in the rain, and occasional fog, and some snow. Whereas hundreds of children could be saved each year if communities take steps to make pedestrian safety a priority. And whereas a lack of physical activity plays a leading role in rising rates of obesity, diabetes, and other health problems among children, and being able to walk to school or bicycle to school offers an opportunity to build activity into daily routine. And whereas driving students to school by private vehicle contributes to traffic congestion and air pollution, and whereas an important role for parents and caregivers is to teach children about pedestrian safety and to become aware of the difficulties and dangers that children face on their trip to school each day and the health and environmental risks related to physical inactivity and air pollution, and whereas community leaders and parents can determine the walkability of their community by using a walkability checklist which can be found at the internet at www.walkamerica.org/checklist-walkability.pdf, and whereas community members and leaders should make a plan to make immediate changes to enable children to walk safely and bicycle in our communities and develop a list of suggestions for improvement that can be done over time, and whereas children, parents, and
5 years ago, it was 90 kids were riding their bikes to school, and 5 years later, there's over 200 kids. So these programs do work, and I would like to support this motion.
All right. Any public input on this item? Oh, Bill, please.
I support this motion because as anybody who drives by the Laguna Middle School any morning knows, there's a line of cars backed up all the way to Albertson's just ready to drop their kids off. So, sounds like a great motion.
I'd just like to point out that I never dropped my children off at Laguna Middle School, both boys, when they attended. Of course, we lived about four houses or down the street around the corner. But I was trying to model. Let's see. Ms. Holmes, any further discussion? Roll call vote, as I recall.
Mr. Unger, Mr. Millar, Mrs. Sheffer, Mrs. Roger, Dr. Eisenglath Rogers, Mr. Buckman, Mr. Angel, passes 7-0.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And we'll move on to item 3, which is district test results in the Calabinity program. Dr. Delkiscamp.
Because, there we go, I say us because Darla Batistic, who was here last week with us, helped contribute to this presentation, even though she's not here, as well as our district office cabinet members who provided input and provided support for this presentation. So you might want to arrange yourself in a way that you can see the screen. I'll get it. I just didn't want them to see me fumbling here. Okay, so the contents of the presentation for tonight include a connection with the PowerPoint slides that were shared with you as part of your board packet. more in-depth review of some of those slides, as well as some new ones, and also a presentation of some possible goals that could jumpstart our discussion this evening. So we'll begin at the end of the packet I provided for you. We had an executive summary that basically stated that we met our API growth target, that we still have achievement gaps for some of our subgroups, and that we acknowledge that we need to focus on mathematics. I also included this chart in your packet, and this is about API, and if you look here, this is our API growth index. Even though it says -1, we did meet our API target, as did all of the districts listed here, because the criteria states that we need to have an API score of 680 or to increase by 1 point, and everybody on this list has a 680 API score. What our staff did notice is the scores of our neighboring districts, Lucemar and Paso Robles. Many times we compare ourselves to them because they're closest to us as far as number of enrollment, students enrolled, and also subgroup populations. And what we've noticed is that they've made some nice, healthy increases in their APIs. And I'm lucky enough to sit with some of my counterparts from those districts at county meetings. And so I get to talk to them about, okay, so what did you do this year in order to have that healthy growth? And I can just tell you that in both areas, they had a focus. Lucemar, for example, shared with me that they have a focus in their elementary schools where they actually have coaches at the schools that are modeling lessons for teachers, and it's kind of like an on-site professional development. In Paso Robles, I know that they have contracted with a date provider voluntarily, and this is an interesting shape, isn't it? Basically, this first part of the graph reflects our declining enrollment. Okay, so the percentage of students with disabilities has been comparable to our declining enrollment. Yet in the last 2 years, we have a combination here. We have a combination of some of the courses that programs that have been taken back from the county, as well as an increase in students with disabilities.
How much of this chart is impacted by changes in the definitions or diagnoses of special needs?
Okay. The question was how much by...
Are we seeing increases because of changes in definition or diagnosis criteria?
Okay, and I'm going to invite my colleague Jackie to answer that question. So are we seeing an increase based on changes in definitions?
Part of it is the state program back account, but I also want to know that that
it should be on.
It is a combination of both. We also have had an increase specifically in the speech and language impairment numbers. So we've had additional identification in those areas. But also significant to this is also how they're scoring with the CAPA, the different types of testing that they've also included that you'll be hearing about in a little bit as well.
Okay.
Do you show, I didn't see here a chart with our Title I or our socioeconomic disadvantaged students?
That one's next. We are able to use this category here, free or reduced lunch. Socioeconomically disadvantaged is actually a group that combines students who qualify for free and reduced price lunch or whose parent levels of education are less than high school. But this category here, free and reduced price meal participation, is one of the criteria for both socioeconomically disadvantaged subgroups and for Title I. That's actually the way we get our funding, okay, part of it. Okay, so what you see here is that it's not a great increase, but it is a steady increase in the number of students who participate in this program. Looks like now we're at about 30, 31, 32. Mm-hmm. Okay, this next slide here, I want to take just a little bit of time to look at it, just to remind everybody that AYP, okay, the criteria for AYP, there are four, and one of them has to do with participation on the assessments. Another one has to do with percent proficient or advanced. The third criteria is API index or score, and then graduation rate. So those are the four criteria. If you look here next to district where I've put PI3, PI stands for program improvement, and I just want to clarify that any school or district that receives Title I funds can become a program improvement school or district. We have schools in our district that don't receive Title I funds, so they won't ever become a program improvement school, only the ones that receive Title I funds. And because our district receives them, then we can be a program improvement school district. So we're in year three. Baywood entered this year in year one. Hawthorne was year one last year, and because of the gains they made, you see that they met their AYP criteria. They did not progress to year two. They remained in year one. If they can do that one more year, then they could actually move out of program improvement. Pacheco is in year five, and Smith has progressed to year two. We have results pending for these groups in math because graduation rate is a part of that, determining that criteria, and the state hasn't been able to incorporate that yet. Okay, so I'm not going to go through all of these, but I'd just like to show you visually. If you look at English learners, we've got, you know, three areas where we're still working. If you look at students with disabilities, okay, a little bit more, but, you know, we're working on that. But if you look at socioeconomically disadvantaged students, this is an area where I think we need to focus some of our attention, because their participation and achievement is more widespread across our district. Some of them. That's correct. You're right. This is a more encompassing. Well, it encompasses more of our students from various subgroups, and not even subgroups, just school-wide. It does do that. So it is a larger group. There is overlap, I think, is what you are trying to point out, that some of our Hispanic students may be included in there, some of our English learners may be in there, students with disabilities and so forth. That is true. And so in addressing this area, those are all the groups we could be helping. Okay, you opened up that little can of worms, so I'm going to pull the lid back. We can indeed a director. We can identify students just the way the state does. Those criteria, free and reduced lunch, or parent education level that is less than high school. We are able to do that. We haven't moved the switch on that in data director because our administration would like to have more of a conversation about that. Okay. All right, this is a slide that I hadn't included before. I'd included part of it. Title III is our accountability for English learners, and what I mainly wanted to point out here is that we are making some growth here, but we need to continue to accelerate our efforts in this area. AMA01 measures English learners making annual progress. Right here, 53.1 is the target. We met it with 53.9. This is actually a little bit of a decrease from our percentage last year, but you can see Lucia Mar, Paso Robles, and Atascadero. You know, we're getting closer to them, and we've been closer to them last year, but we want to continue this. AMA 02, yes.
So for this AMA 01, yes. We don't have it. Target
we do.
So we just exceeded our target the previous year enough so that even though we're 53.9, they had to modify.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, we've been increasing in all of these categories. Okay. So AMA 02, this is the first year they divided out. They take the, these used to be all one cohort, but now what they're saying is English learners who have been in our schools for less than 5 years and have become English proficient as measured by the CELT, not the CST, the California English Language Development Test, what percentage? This is the target they set for us, and here's how we did. And that's interesting that we did better than the rest in that area. Broken out here for students who have been in our schools 5 or more years and attained that same English proficiency, here's the target, here's our result, and again, we're leading the pack just a bit. And so what you can see is, you know, we have good, steady, consistent growth in English language arts in all of our grades, grades 2 to 11. Yes, we see some like 4th grade on a nice trend, and 5th grade and 6th grade and 9th grade's doing nicely too. When we look at math, however, we get quite a different graph. And as I said in our summary, this is an area of concern for us. A little bit of growth here in 5th grade, but otherwise pretty much flat, and overall as the grades progress, a decline. Okay. I can... And I think one of the slides coming up might be able to address that for you. We did want to look at our accelerated students and how they fit into this whole puzzle here. And so what we did was we said, well, let's look at our English 7 accelerated. So we did this for English language arts, okay? English 7. And so the blue line represents this group of students in 2007, 2008, who had an accelerated English class. And then, whether they had an accelerated English class or not the following year, we wanted to see, well, what percentage of that cohort remained proficient and advanced. And so if you see, it's like about 100, maybe 99 here, 100%. So these seventh graders, when they progress to eighth grade, maintain that percentage of proficient or advanced. And when they progress to ninth grade, maintain that high level also. These are our eighth graders in 07-08 who had an accelerated English class. They progressed to ninth grade and to 10th grade and still maintained a high level of proficient and advanced. English 9 honors in 07-08. This is their 10th grade and this is their 11th grade. And you see a dip, but it's 95%. This might be one or two students who weren't proficient and advanced in that year. Okay? And 10th grade, 07-08, took an honors English class and an 11th. And then this is the 11th grade class in 07-08. So you see our accelerated students in English language arts are doing great. Yes? Can you turn on your microphone, please?
The last part of the header is the post-2-year proficiency. Is that coming out of PEL?
No, these are all of our students who took, doesn't matter what subgroup, an accelerated English class. And then how that same group performed the following 2 years on the English language arts CSTs.
So do you have the ability now to track children that are coming out of PEL and see how they're doing?
Yes. Data director is very good at giving us cohort data.
And then at some point, I'd be interested in seeing kind of demographic makeup of our honors and accelerated course students, if that's
okay.
Possible.
Yes, it is possible, but you want to take notes for me? Okay. All right, thank you. So now let's look at math, a closer look at math. We've got English language arts up here. We already talked about it. But let's look at math. And this is across all, if we put all of our math courses together and we go by grade. So grades 2 to 8, if this were our target, we're right in the ballpark. But as soon as we go to grade 9, we take a significant dip. And as we progress to grade 10, again, and then grade 11. So this right here is a concern for us. If we look at our accelerated students, so if a student is taking Algebra 1 in grade 7, they're accelerated. They're doing great there. If we look at grade 8, when these students would progress to geometry, they're doing great there also. However, when we go to Algebra 2, we have a significant drop in the number of students who are proficient or advanced. And then when we progress to grade 10, you see it go up just a little. Yes, it is a smaller group. That's correct. Right, it goes up, but it isn't a true reflection of this group that was here. That's correct. And then our most struggling students who are in grades 11, and taking Algebra 1 or Geometry or Algebra 2, have even a much lower percent who are proficient or advanced. And, this reflects that we are maybe not intervening the way we need to for them, and may also reflect that some of their past learnings in earlier grades, concept development, isn't strong enough to help them be successful then at this level. Okay. So now we're going to discuss just some possible goals, okay, as a way of jump-starting our discussion here. Okay, and you'll notice we're putting 2010-2013 because this isn't a flash-in-the-pan plan that we want. This is something that we want to be able to create that will sustain success for our students. Okay, so
Rita?
Okay.
What I would like to say about this success plan concept is we've been talking at length about the need to really get the key people involved in mathematics in our district, i.e. the teachers, the administration, and really sit around, and perhaps even the kids and the parents, and really talk about what's working, what the struggle points are, and what we need to do. Because with this type of data, it seems to me that the long-term strategy, the long-term success, really will involve a collective agreement on what the solution is. And I think that that's part of this concept, and that's why it's sort of spread out over 3 years, because it's a significant issue throughout the state. And I think the deeper solution will involve key groups of professionals working through the solution. So that, keep that in mind as you kind of look at this.
Thank you. So first item here, we need to continue to define our essential course standards and to ensure that they're coherent across all grade levels, that we have articulation, that they're connected. Secondly, pedagogy, we need to focus on our instruction and the interventions that we offer students. Assessment, and I know some of you were able to look at that chapter in the book that our principals council is reviewing that emphasizes the importance and the use of formative assessments, which help us prepare for learning, okay, and summative assessments, which give us the end result of the learning. As you saw in our data, we definitely need an intensive focus on our grade 7-12 student performance. We need to set some targets. And to do that, we need to develop SMART goals for student achievement in those areas. And here you have specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and timely goals. Another possible goal would be to intensify the support, both academic and social-emotional, that we are able to offer our socioeconomically disadvantaged students. And one way would be to ensure that those students are being consistently, that their progress is being consistently monitored and that they're being provided interventions at every school. Also, that we're creating opportunities that encourage family involvement and family partnerships in student achievement. And here are some examples. And some of this is underway, but again, we need to intensify what we do to make those connections. And again, what we focus our attention on, what we set targets for, usually gets done. And so that's why it's important to do that for our students. And a final possible goal would be to maintain and accelerate the current initiatives we have for our English Learner Program, because we're seeing results, but we have a ways to go. So, AMAOs for Title III accountability, or which ones?
In our book, we were given annual measurable objectives for the CSD and language arts.
I'm sorry, I was listening to him at the same time. Okay, One more time, please.
It happens to you. There was a slide 6 and slide 7 that were the annual
measurable objectives for CSP and English language arts?
Oh, yes.
And the chart that you had on
AMAOs for Title III?
For Title III. Is that, those are different?
That's different, yes. The AMAO is for Title III and English learners, and AMO is for our population, you know, our regular population district-wide.
Okay, and so... Thanks. And so as we look at slides 6 and 7, what I'm hoping at some point we'll see is that compared to previous years, as we've done on others, so that we can see whether there's been growth for the English language arts in the CSTs. Is that right?
Okay, I probably would. Are you speaking to the PowerPoint that was in your packet?
Yes.
Okay, which is different from the one
right
up here. Okay.
So sometime in the future, if you want, I know you think of that.
Okay. Thank you.
I mean, because some of this is telling, and it would be great to see how we're progressing on those as well.
I understand what you're saying now that I see the slide. Thank you.
Thanks.
Ella.
I want to thank you for this presentation. It's a realistic and kind of sobering view in some respects of what's going on in our district. I think we share common concerns, particularly with mathematics. And I also very much appreciate that you're reaching out to districts around us that are showing improvement in some pretty dramatic ways and asking what they're doing. I think that collaboration and outreach is really important to help us not look internally at how we can reinvent the wheel, but to look outward and see what others are doing successfully, especially since we share some numbers and similar demographics and similar populations. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can learn from them and achieve similar success in some of these areas. I know that it will take some time, but I hope it doesn't take too much time before we can have similar improvement.
Okay.
Thank you. I like your presentation in that it answers the questions all board members should have is in regards to testing, and that's how are we doing versus the standards? And that was answered. How did we do against ourselves? What are the trends? And again, that's answered. We can explore that issue a lot more. And then how are we doing versus our neighbors? Those are the three questions that we should be able to develop our data reporting against. The other thing I liked seeing up there was that we do have problems, and if the problems are hidden from us or if we don't know what the problems are, we can't solve them. So I appreciate the openness and transparency.
Thank you.
Catherine.
Rita, thank you also. Is this because of the new data director program that we're able to follow individual groups of students as they progress year from year? Have we not been able to break that data out before?
That's correct. It would have been very difficult to follow a cohort before.
That's enormously helpful to watch, and as Ellen says, very sobering to see that our students reach a point and then they start going down a hill. And I think what you're telling us is that we're reaching out and learning some of the lessons from our neighboring districts in terms of using coaches and instructional providers. I'd like to have you explain to me what that is in a second. And that is helping them to sort of right that ship and start making some progress there. I also note that in our own English language program, which does seem to maintain its growth, and so we're doing well in that area, we still spike in ninth grade, and I wonder if you think that's related to the class size reduction that we have heretofore had in ninth grade English.
Mm-hmm. It very well could be, but we need to look at that more closely. You know, anytime you look at something in education,
setting measurable goals and then accomplishing each of those goals, is that how they go about doing that?
Well, I'm sure that is a part of it, but it's also, I was fortunate enough to be in a presentation where this provider consultant shared what they were doing with other schools in the county. This happened at the end of last year. And basically what they were doing was helping teachers to focus their instruction in such a way that students knew what they were supposed to learn. They understood the standards, what they were supposed to learn, and then they talk about all the components of an effective lesson that includes some direct instruction, but other elements also. And so what this company has done, or consulting group, is that they have committed to working with them for 2 years, and that involves providing professional development. But in addition, they also help them to put in a system of observation so that they're collecting data from visiting classrooms and adjusting instruction in that way.
Thank you very much.
As I think I can echo the comments of the rest of the board members, I think one of the important things that we have gotten out of this data is there is an achievement gap. The achievement gap exists in our district, and now the next question, which I think your goals are addressing, is what are we going to do about it?
I had a note to myself in here about, and I think we've covered them all, but I wanted to make sure. I don't want to put you on the spot, list our district and school sites' numerically significant subgroups of students. I know we've got Title I, EL, special.
Well,
go ahead. You can do better.
Title I wouldn't be a subgroup.
Okay.
But
It isn't a subgroup. No.
Well, Title I is a program that we offer to students. So, for example, Hispanic Latino is one of our subgroups. Socioeconomically disadvantaged.
Okay, that's a better word. Yeah, that's
white, Asian, in our district. What didn't I mention? Students with disabilities, English learners. Those are significant subgroups, and some of them are meeting the criteria and some are not.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody have any other questions? Any comment from the public or on the
I
side?
Had one more question.
Go ahead, Phil. You didn't even have two.
On our participation rate, and I meant to ask this earlier, we didn't meet that goal, which would seemingly to the public's eye say, well, why didn't they meet that goal? So what's going on there? Can you explain?
Okay. Partially. So for special education, students are students with disabilities not meeting that. It is difficult. It's a dilemma for our staff because our primary intent, and I think Jackie will agree with me, is to do what's best for the student. When that IEP is written, it's what is in the best interest of that student, and that applies to what assessment they take. Okay. So one thing that is difficult for us is that if a student who has an IEP takes the CST, the California Standards Test, the STAR test, with modifications, they don't count in our AYP calculation for participation. If they take the CMA or the CAPA, they do, but not if they take the CST with modifications. In addition, for our API, those students with an IEP who take the CST with modifications, they count for participation, but their score is whatever they got on their score with modifications doesn't matter. It is recorded as far below basic, a 200.
So then a double hit from the state.
That's right.
It's just ridiculous. I had to say that. Yeah. Sacramento.
Okay, any other comments? Rita, thank you, and thanks to Darla Batistic as well, and congratulations on flawless utilization of advanced technology in your presentation.
Thank you.
And here we are at Del Mar, too. Okay, we'll move on to item four, facilities use fees, special circumstances. Mr. Miller, chicken's coming home to roost.
Okay. No, I'm not. I'm going to sit here and talk to you. This is an exchange of title to a reduced fee that a for-profit type of business would be asked to pay for, but that this business that enhances student learning could enjoy a nonprofit status in terms of facility use fees. The principals felt it was important for them to be involved in the process of determining the validity of the program being offered at their site. Each site has a little bit different viewpoint and a little different importance that they attach to different programs. One program might not be as valuable or even useful to the students of one school versus another. The program will offer substantial instructional benefits to the students. I think principals can legitimately gauge this. The hours of the program will be determined to meet the needs of most students. It does no good to offer this at 5 o'clock at night when it was designed to keep kids for an extended period of time past the school bell. The business will charge reasonable rates. We don't want to encourage a business to charge $25 an hour when it's reasonable to charge $5 an hour. And so we would ask for a reasonable rate structure. And then we felt, the principals felt, that the availability of scholarships for students, and this was mentioned by several board members also as a criteria they were interested in, scholarships would be made available to needy students. So having gone through the discussion, having come up with some points for the board's consideration, we recommend that the board approve the criteria and create a special category of facility users meeting the criteria that will be charged in accordance with a nonprofit schedule of fees when utilizing district facilities.
I move we approve the above criteria and the special category. I think this is an excellent idea, a good solution to take it back to the site.
Thank you.
We have a motion by Catherine and a second by, I'm going to give it to Mark just because it was a toss-up. And you told me I was old last the board meeting. However, I've got a couple of questions on this. It's less clear after you get past bullet point one, or the top one. Who else is doing is carrying out these other functions? Is it going to continue to be the principal who, makes this evaluation about substantial instructional benefits and whether the hours are okay and whether the reasonable charges and the way scholarships are off? That's all principals call?
Excellent question. It would be the principal that's leading that. They will address this. What we envision is a process where the business will go to the principal and say, I think I'm entitled to the nonprofit. The principal will have a list that they will ask the questions and get the answers, and that will be forwarded to our property clerk, who then will make sure it meets our criteria. If there's any kinds of gray areas that will come to me, I'll meet with the principal, we'll solve the issues, and go forward with it. We're looking for reasons to approve businesses
right.
that help our kids. And so we're going to be liberal, and we kept this rather broad and undefined for the specific purpose, that there might be some little area that they can't quite meet or criterias wouldn't match, but if they substantially are interested in teaching children in our after-school program, we want to encourage their existence.
Okay. And you kind of touched on my other question, which is where would they go with an appeal? And I can't think of a better place to go than to Mr.
To me.
Miller.
To me.
With your people
what
skills.
Appeal?
And then my last question has to do with offering of scholarships. Essentially, that means that for economically disadvantaged students, we'll do either some kind of sliding scale or waive fees.
Or waive would be our interest, I think. The sliding scale is kind of subjective. I think we need to have some sort of a And I think the principals are, again, in the best position
best
to gauge
to
without
it.
Without conversation in public about why that should happen, that this student ought to have this happen. And to the extent that the business owner and offerer of the program recognizes the principal's expertise in this area, that's going to be very important.
And where a program might be provided at multiple sites, or are we contemplating some way to accommodate the provider so they don't have to jump through a hoop
yeah.
at every site?
Yeah. Okay. And it's conceivable. Right now, we don't have many programs at all sites. Okay, so some programs are at two sites, and some programs, many programs exist only at one site. And it's a unique kind of development. I think it's really important for our kids, but it's kind of a growth of teacher, principal, business owner, kind of meshing their interests together and coming up with this kind of a program. It's yeah. it's unique, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a good staff response to the
process. So if item 6 can be pulled, then we'll be bringing that back in the October meeting.
Okay. Is that satisfaction of the board? Okay. So be it. And in that case, item 5, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 7, approval, pulling item 7, which is the approval of contract with unrepresented employer, assistant superintendent personnel and educational services, Rick Robinette. 8, acceptance of donations. 9, disposition of surplus property. 10, approval of furniture and equipment request. 11, approval of purchase orders. 12, which I'd like pull. Okay. Approval of school-connected organizations. And 13, approval of an out-of-state field trip for Morro Bay High School FFA to Indianapolis, Indiana. Okay. I'll take a motion on items 5, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 13.
I'll move approval of item 5, 8 through 11, and 13.
That's Dr. Olker's spirited motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Angel. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Those items pass 7-0, and we'll go to item 7.
I asked to have this item pulled because I just wanted to take a moment to have us all recognize Rick for all the years of work that he's done, but also in all the various different areas. I think this is going to be a great thing for the district. So I move approval of item 7.
I'll second. Sorry, Rick, I couldn't resist. So before we get to the actual vote, I'd like to acknowledge Gail Sears' letter and endorsement and support for this move. I appreciate the fact that she couldn't express that when she appeared earlier, since it was not a fait accompli, and it's not even to this moment, but I suspect it's going to be. Also, I would like to thank Kent Taylor for his communicating to board members his support for this move as well. Okay. And any further discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. We're very pleased. And now, who pulled item 12? Ellen, I'll defer to you. You go ahead first.
I need to get to it. So I know when we talked about this before, I just wanted to check on the status. I believe there was a list of several schools we were waiting, who needed to do some paperwork and taking care of things to meet the criteria to be current with the to be compliant with current law and CSBA recommendations. And this addresses Morro Bay Athletic Boosters and Morro Bay Music Boosters. And I just wanted to kind of check in and see where the other schools who that were not in compliance were, if they're kind of continuing to do what they need to do to become.
They're not on the list. There's some roadblocks for some of the groups, and they haven't met the criteria at this point. But because September 30th is our drop-dead date for them to be valid fundraisers and offer the protection of their organization to the grant, to the person making the donation, then we felt it was necessary to bring forth who we had. Sure. We still do not have those other organizations' paperwork, and we would fully expect that at the October meeting we'll bring additional groups, and we will continue to do it as long as they continue to bring it forth. But starting September 30th, on October 1st, they're not available for fundraising anymore.
Okay, so, and that's, yeah, so that's something that moves forward. You advise them that, or they already know that they cannot.
We've been doing it multiple times over the last 30 days. There's emails that have been going back and forth between the vice principals and the district office, and it's a fully understood issue and a fully understood consequence by the schools. We look to them to work with their organizations in order to validate the process. So it's on their table.
Okay. So having had my own questions answered, I would at this time move that we approve Morro Bay High School Athletics Boosters and Morro Bay High School Music Boosters. Oh, okay.
She said
I need to clarify that I believe Ilsa made a correction and advised you by email, but you probably don't have it printed in front of you. So there are three groups being proposed.
Okay. So the third, the blue, and
so they're all from Morro Bay.
Received by the schools, and I think it's a great step, and so I'm glad we're taking that one and going forward on it.
Thank you, sir. I too was able to attend the open house at C.L. Smith, and would love to get a copy of Amy's PowerPoint presentation, because it explains stuff that better than I've ever seen it explained. As regards to the item that Ms. Schaefer pulled, I was at Los Osos Middle School as part of a meeting that to bring that school to have it become a PTA school. So I'm hoping that we'll be seeing that on this approved list very quickly. Very happy to be volunteering both at Laguna and Los Osos Middle School as providing an after-school program. Junior high kids are great. It's wonderful. Let's see. I also spent quite a bit of time with Chris Dowler regarding ROP and the follow-up on his I have a follow-up on his reaction to the ROP board's goals, and really he's really dug in on this, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? All righty, moving on. We've already done item 16, advanced agenda, item 17. I'm going to throw out there that I think we need to be looking towards scheduling. Board self-evaluation. I'm not sure that's the best way to refer to what I have in mind, but after the election, and after the board is constituted, however it's going to be constituted after that election, I think we need to schedule a board get-together where we sort of talk about our practices and talk about maybe how we want to do things differently, what things about our processes and best practices that we use now that we want to retain or strengthen, and maybe what things that we do now that we don't need to do anymore or could do in a different way. And I'd like to acknowledge that I'm inspired in this endeavor by Dr. Prater, our superintendent, who is sort of asking these questions throughout the organization, and I think the board should be asking itself some of these questions as well. I think it should be scheduled for perhaps February, March time frame. That will give us a chance to get through the election, get to CSBA, and have the dust settle a little bit. And that's kind of what I'd like to propose.
And, I'll support that. I was hoping earlier, but that'll work.
Yeah. Well, it's just we're going to get a little jammed up with the election, CSBA, holidays. So just to have it realistic. And I get grouchy around the holidays, so you know.
You get, well, wait a minute. When
I
are
don't
you not,
get
oh, it must be a holiday every month. Okay.
Phil, I appreciate your support of that, and I'd be more than happy to come back and defend this position at the next board meeting, but I'm not going
to
be here.
Mr. Grinch, I would be happy to support that as well.
Thank you. So, anyone else for advanced agenda items? Bill?
Looking at the survey of parents regarding 2 week spring break, is that something we could do on a Friday update and see, do we have results?
Yeah, we've collected results from, I think, all of the schools now. So it's a matter of kind of tabulating them and disaggregating them so we can kind of see. My hope is to look at different grade levels and different communities, see if we're getting the same feedback. I can tell you it's a pretty mixed bag. I'm not sure it's going to tell us what we want to know, but it'll tell us what it tells us, and that certainly can be part of a Friday.
Yeah,
pack.
Now I'm hearing from stay-at-home parents who love it, so it's
can you use data,
mixed reactions.
Can you use Data Director to get us that?
Yeah, I doubt it.
Yeah, in this originally,
let me just for a second. So, yes. Phil, the answer was we're going to get updated on it, and you're okay
we'll
with
it. Provide
that,
it in a Friday packet if that's okay with the board.
Oh, is that all right, Phil?
I don't think we need to have it here.
Okay, good. I'm sorry, Mark. Go ahead.
No, it's no problem. It happens all the time. this originally was in response to the economy, and then there's been an article in the Tribune on people living on the edge, and then tonight we heard that the number of classified applications is way up. So what I'd like to do is, and it's kind of hard to get words around this, is to have a future agenda item where we might look at things that we could do to give additional support or value to what we do for the community. People may be looking for career choices, and I'd like the board to discuss just having the staff look into what we can offer through adult education. And the other thing is just, since I'm not sure that this is going to take a lot of discussion, or we can just ask staff tonight to look into what we can offer the community.
Retreat, I guess it would be called. And I'm wondering if there's enough I got the sense that there was support among the board members for that. If there's enough support here tonight, is it possible to go ahead and approve that as a future?
I would not stand in the way of a groundswell of support for that item. So.
That will enable board president and clerk and the superintendent to
get it scheduled.
Get it scheduled.
Okay. If I can just ask Marilyn, because I would support it, are we basically asking to just skip this as an agenda item and just move straight to allowing this to be scheduled?
That's what I'm thinking.
That's a great idea. Thank you.
So we're going to waive the second. Second
we're meeting. Not going to make you jump through all the hoops,
okay.
Walter. I know you were looking forward to it.
I was working on the arguments all day today. So. No, I think that's probably a good plan. I will. Okay, so we'll
so
do
how,
that. And
how
then,
would we go about doing that? Would we just ask for a show of hands of people who
just
are...
Just consensus? Or we'd,
we'll be able to hit the topics later on.
And if our past practices, which I guess is one of the things we'll be looking at, is any indication that we do sort of the board itself formulates the agenda that it wants to talk about at the meeting. And so. All right, let's see.
Okay.
Hold it. No. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant okay. Like okay.
No, okay. I'm done with that. If
right,
we're in agreement, then we can go ahead
and find
a date that's mutually agreeable.
And we will. And I appreciate that, Marilyn. Item 18, update on the Transfer County Office of Education Services. Oh, you do, Chris. That's why it's at the end of the agenda. Farewell.
Thank you. This is an item that we are bringing back to you from last May when we first surfaced it as an opportunity for the district to take in the medically fragile class and deliver the curriculum and the program to our students at a district level rather than from the County Office of Education. We would be transferring it from the County Office of Education to our district's program, and the board authorized staff to serve the preliminary notice on the County Office of Education that required a year and a day. We had to give that notice at the end of June. And you, at that time, requested an update on the process prior to the final notice being served. The board may rescind its notice of withdrawal at any point prior to October 15th. And that's a practice that was developed in the SELPA-wide districts on taking back programs. You've served the initial notice. You could change your mind in October if you felt things weren't going quite the right way. Throughout the process, we've been trying to measure the programmatic details that the county office provides versus what we would provide. And essentially, the program looks very similar in between the two units. The main difference is that we would be providing, as a district, a program to our district children. So it would have an inherent, we'd own that program because we own those kids. And we feel that's a very important distinction and has been proven out to be a very successful formula for us in the last 3 years of other programs that we have returned from the county office to the district's stable, if you will. There are a number of fiscal details which are still hazy. The main problem there is the county office hasn't finalized its rate structure and won't until the middle of October by agreement. And we have some issues to look at. Once we determine that the program's coming to us, we will interview the teacher, the parents, the students, and determine all of the important details. But in a preliminary investigation, it would seem that the program taking it back will be a cost-effective move for the district. And we just want you to know that those are estimates based upon not based upon any solid evidence from the county about what they would charge us next year, and not knowing exactly what kind of services we would need to offer until we determine all of the issues with the children. But our overall aspect of this is that nothing has occurred in our investigation over the last 4 months between the notification to the county office that we would take the program back and tonight that would change our mind in our recommendation. And we continue to recommend to the board that we approve the process to go forward with final notification to the county that we will be taking back our medically fragile class. As a point of reference, the class has 6 students in it now, and they are all in a very fragile medical year. Lucia Marr has already contracted to deliver all of its special ed with the county, so that their program will also remain with the county.
Okay. And what was the other thing? Where are the services being provided to these students? What
Sloan
physical
High.
Location?
San Luis Sloan. High School.
Okay, and that will stay the same?
Correct.
Okay, Ellen?
So you just asked one of my questions, which is where these services are provided. And the second one is, you said there are 6 students right now. So just to be completely
clear.
Not clear or not to sound unfeeling or anything else. So these students cost approximately $35,000 a year. I just took the 213,676 and divided by 6.
And the reason is staffing mostly. Okay, so we're going to require a certificated teacher in the classroom, and then the details of the educational program will be determined, but right now it looks like 2 paraeducators and a full-time nurse.
Okay.
About what? That's wrong? Will come up and correct me. It's okay. This is your program.
Well, always time for a correction of Russ.
Yeah, I think so.
Just waiting for permission. Yes, 2 paraeducators and a teacher and a 0.4 nurse would support 6 students. Also, as a question that came up, are all of these students currently residing in San Luis Coastal, or is this a regional program that would seek from other districts, or the districts seek from us? We currently have, or the county currently has, a Cambria student coming down to the program at San Luis High, and that would continue. So we would continue and transfer the contract to us.
Well, I We have one student from out of district, Jackie, is what you're saying, but potentially we could receive more students from out of district, correct?
Correct. In fact, Cambria has been this year seeing more students medically fragile and with disabilities that they are unable to serve in their small community, and they have been contracting more with us this last year.
So we picked up one? One from Cambria?
One from Cambria for the medically fragile specifically, but we're seeing that there are more students in that small community needing to contract with our district to support their needs, and so they're transporting several students down to us.
One of the aspects of Ellen's question, which I didn't develop fully, is that the larger districts are offering this medically fragile class. We wouldn't expect them to transfer students to us, but the smaller districts definitely can't do their own program, so they'll look for the geographical location that makes the most sense for them to send these kids to. And whether it's us or Paso or Tascadero or the CMR, it would be the problem. Other districts look about the program's excellence in terms of sending for SDC or ED or other types of programs, because medically fragile transportation requires such a risk factor attached to it. Otherwise, it isn't, and then they can shop for the excellence of the program.
Okay. I was the one who asked for this to be brought back with some clarification prior to the October deadline for final notification with the county, and I'm still unclear as to whether I'm in favor of bringing this program back to us. So I'd like to do a little more investigation on my own. I'd like to meet with the teacher again, and I'd like to ask some questions, not necessarily of our administration, with regard to this class. So I'm wondering, for me, I would like to see this item come back at the next board meeting for final approval.
What would be the nature of the type of questions we could help you with? Where's the concern in terms of the district operating it versus the county office?
Well, one of my issues is that we have brought back so much, and I visited the classroom. I see that some of the children really are tremendously fragile. I am wondering if the county has they have already established their procedures and their framework for dealing with these students.
For more time, and the fact that we have a little more time, I would like to see, if we're able to help you do your research or provide you that time, I certainly don't have a problem with that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Jackie, if I can ask two specific questions tonight that I think we might be able to handle. We have a student coming down from Cambria. We're saying that student would probably continue to come to our new program.
Absolutely.
Okay. How is that student transported? Is it on the county bus, and does that bus make several stops along the way, or is there independent transportation?
Transported by Cambria Transportation.
Okay, so Cambria would continue to bring the one student.
Correct.
Okay. And then, and this may sound, do we have the opportunity to say no once we establish a program, or does the county office have to maintain a program? So if we take these six students and the county has a request for one student, does the county then still have to maintain a program similar to this, or do we have the ability to turn somebody away? And then maybe two or three questions. Shall I try it again?
Maybe break it down a little bit.
Okay.
Let me see if it's a regional program, so the districts that we agree to support are the small districts, such as, or the two small districts,
Cambria and Cayucas. However, if Templeton makes a referral for a medically fragile student and it's closer in proximity or the caseload is too high in Paso or Atascadero, we would be accepting that referral. So we keep the doors open and we add staff and program support for the number of students that are in the programs. It's a regional program like our other classes.
It's important to understand a regional program, if we run that, we're required to take the referrals from other districts.
Thank you. That was the question. That was part of it.
But we take their funding for the student as well.
Yes.
As callous as this sounds, do we break even?
And their liability.
On the funding?
Yeah, we do.
Yes.
In reality, we do.
Fairly callous.
Yes.
So do we... Sorry, I have not been, may I be correct? So do we break, is this program, is it basic aid or is it revenue limit? I mean, if we...
Neither.
Okay, so is there a dollar amount attached per student or
yes.
Is it a fixed amount no matter how many students?
It's a dollar amount per student. Another district would pay us, okay? So we have seats available. We determine what the rate is for our seat if you send your student. On a regional program, it's a little bit different, but they would have to pay their fair share of our rate structure. So there's a SELPA-wide agreement that establishes each district charges its own rate for every type of special ed that they offer. And if one district wants to send its student to another district, it already knows what the rate structure is.
Okay.
And we establish ours not so much on the basis of making a profit, but in sharing the expenditure of running that class with whoever comes. So we look at it as 10 seats in a class, not the medically fragile. I'm off the reservation a little bit on this one. But let's say there's 10 seats in a class. We determine what the total cost of that class is, divide by 10, and each seat is, if you will, sold for a certain amount of money.
Okay, thank you.
And there also... In the SELPA agreement, there are things such as the retention of liability on the sending district for the appropriateness of the student
Absolutely.
Plan IEP.
To be clear about it, a sending district retains its legal liability for that student. A receiving district, such as what we would be, assumes no liability should there be some sort of a lawsuit against that child, unless it's an obvious liability for
premises liability,
building, like or some sort of defect in our facility. If the roof caves in, we're liable.
Okay.
So, go ahead. Marilyn, is what I heard you say is that you're making a motion to ask for this, or are you just asking? Because I'm more than happy to second the motion to bring this back.
I'd just like to defer it, and I'd like to ask Jackie and Russell, do you have awareness of any lawsuits that have been filed that include both the district of residence and the providing district?
For any reason, any lawsuit?
There are cases where a sending district to the county office program, both the county and the district, were named in the suit. Yet are agreeing.
I personally don't see any benefit to delaying this, but I guess if we delay it long enough, it'll be a fait accompli anyway, so.
Sure.
I just wanted to state one more thing as we were talking about the fiscal parts. I wanted to bring us back to the nature of transferring the students into our district of service, and I think that we need to really focus on that, and I can tell you that I have looked at every IEP. I am attending every IEP meeting and talking with William Walters, the current teacher, on a regular basis, and know of all the different needs of the students. So we have spoken. We even met collaboratively during the summer, during extended school year. He's such an eccentric gentleman that's very motivated, and he has a passion for what he's doing, and he's very excited about the site that he's on. So I think the only changes that would occur would be the operator, and that would be the district.
So I wanted to just focus us back on the students.
Thank you, Jackie. That was very helpful. It's a good reminder because this really didn't start off to be about money and ultimately really isn't about money. So what have we decided to do, board members? I don't know that there's a motion on the floor. I heard a please don't do this tonight. Let's do it the next board meeting.
I'd like to move that we defer action on this item until the next board meeting.
And I second that motion.
Motion by Mrs. Rogers, second by Mark. All in favor? Opposed? No. Passes what, 6-1? Oh, 5-1, thank you. All right. I think we're done. Are we done? All right, well, let's begin adjournment. We will adjourn. So.